know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping. Welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. We'll go right to it this week. My guest today from ESPN is a Illini alum, and we're going to get into that. My guest is John Gassaway. So, John, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Let's just go right into your Illinois roots. So you were a student at Illinois, and this kind of started basketball for you and started, you know, your career direction started in your time here in Champaign. So let's go to that. When did you arrive? I know you have a doctorate from here, so you were probably here forever. So let's just go through all of that to start.
Yeah, I certainly don't want to start the podcast by throwing down the gauntlet, but here goes. I'll put my orange and blue street cred up against anybody's. My grandfather flunked out of the U of I. My parents both went to the U of I. My parents were, I'm from Springfield, and my parents were taking me over to Champaign to see the first football game of the year. That I have great respect for you, Robert, for following Illinois football assiduously when I had to give up long ago. It was just far too painful.
Yeah.
So I salute you. That's great. you are a better fan than I.
I don't know about that.
I had to take that off ramp a long time ago. And then, I went to the U of I and stayed there forever in search of a degree that would actually get me gainfully employed. You referred to the lengthy grad school career made possible by a full-time position at the Illini Union. And they were my tuition was forgiven because I was working at the Union. And, one thing led to another. Here I am, low these many years later, writing about basketball. So it's been a wild ride.
Yeah. So what, the 80s obviously were everything Illinois basketball, at least a 3-seed or a 4-seed every single year. So I'm sure you were kind of raised on that.
Man, those were the days. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know,
if only.
Yes, getting mad at a Sweet 16 loss. And what was your fan experience? Like, what, you know, did you have, you know, Nick Anderson posters in your bedroom growing up? You know, what was your, you know, were you, was it Illinois? I want to go there because I went to Illinois because of the basketball and football team. Like, I decided in 1989, this is where I'm going. I don't care about the academics. Just get me in. I just want to be in the Orange Crush and be in Block I. So, you know, what was your, did that fandom lead in that direction for you as well?
Yeah, I loved the aspect of that fandom that you describe percolating the entire town, area, state, and culture. When I was at the U of I, I remember going to Cranor to see some kind of play. I don't remember what it was. And help me out, podcast listeners, but there was a weather guy on the local NBC affiliate at that time. I think his name was Keith Page, maybe. And like he was given a cameo role in this play. And as it happened, Andy Kaufman had just hit a game-winning shot. To be honest, I don't remember against whom, but it was a big deal at the time. And he just ad-libbed in this play, which was probably, I don't know, Molière or Marlowe or something. he just ad-libbed Andy Kaufman for three, and the crowd went nuts. I love that, you know, Illinois basketball courses through the veins of everybody around there. My fan experience very much included, you know, back when I had a normal job. This is once I had graduated. I thought, man, I really like college basketball, and there's this new thing called blogging. I'll give that a try. And the first year I started up, Illinois went to the national championship game, and I was blogging but I was doing it about the entire Big Ten, and it was just a key side benefit that the team I love, and the team that, you know, I'm a fan of many sports, but my fondest wish by far would be that Illinois win a national championship in basketball. You know, that's what matters most to me in my sports life.
Yep.
And it nearly happened. You know, it was 70-70 after 10 o'clock Central Time that night. So that was a propitious moment to start writing about basketball. And I just kept at it, not getting any income from it for many years. And then finally, you know, I always get a chuckle when people call and say, how do you do what you do? Well, I did it for free for a long time. So
hey, I'm familiar with it.
It all worked out, and it was propelled by my Illinois fandom.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that 70-70, cause I have referenced that moment. I think it was 1:29 left, and
We had the ball. Yep. We had the momentum.
Yep.
It had come back from 15 down. It's on the plate.
It's right there. Yep. I turned during that timeout. I turned to my friend Jeff sitting next to me, and I said, "Like, this next 1:29 like defines my life. Like, we're either going to get this or we're not. And I'm either going to have the thing I've always wanted, or
I'm getting upset all over again.
I might be decades without getting it, and it's all on a minute 29 or minute 31 or whatever
We'll get it done. I've got faith. We'll get it done. Yeah.
Yep. It'll happen. It'll happen in my lifetime. It will happen. Okay. So let's go to Wonk then. Okay. So, cause you know, I think some people probably don't even know you're the OG Illini blogger, like, you know, like 2004, there's this, wow, you can just go read this guy's thoughts. You know, I think, was the site called Big Ten Wonk or what did I forget?
Yeah. That was yes. Big Ten Wonk dot blogspot.
Yes. Yes. Perfect.
That
yes.
was back in the blogspot days.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent.
You know, I was working in marketing. I had a real job, and I was fascinated with the idea of, what if I just start writing into the internet and I don't tell anybody about it? You know, won't it be cool? Like, if it's this big sensation and it just goes viral. And of course it didn't. I mean, even, you know, I did it for 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. And if I told you, you know, the readership numbers, even, you know, on the best days in year three, I would turn 3 shades of red. I mean, it was never a runaway success by any means.
Right.
But man, it was a great outlet because the fact that I was pouring my heart and soul into this thing made me take a second look at this job and say, well, you know, maybe I don't like it as much as I thought I did, because mm-hmm. I'm really kind of living through this this Big Ten Wonk thing. So that was for 3 years, and then at the close of that third year, I got an interesting email from my friend Ken Pomeroy. I think the subject line was literally, you know, busy ? And that led to conference calls with Baseball Prospectus, and as he put it, this guy from Prospectus that I'd never heard of, that turned out to be Nate Silver. Mm-hmm. And we launched a Basketball Prospectus website. That was a lot of fun. That lasted for me for 6 seasons. And then ESPN acquired the staff of Basketball Prospectus, kind of like Charles Foster Kane did in Citizen Kane of a rival paper. And here we are.
So who was the original Basketball Prospectus staff? It was you and
It was me, it was Ken, and we were on the college side. Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of people I'd never heard of, and then Ken said, oh, they're going to do a pro side, and I thought, oh man. And they've got this guy, Kevin Pelton. And I was like, yeah, I resented him just on concept. And, you know, Kevin Pelton knows, I will stand and fall on he knows more about basketball, period, than anybody, because he knows the NBA, he knows college, he knows the women's game, college and professional. He is a true basketball polymath and my greatest friend. So it was us, Bradford Doolittle, and we were helped along by the efforts of a baseball guy who edited us named Joe Sheehan. So we were the few but the proud. Yeah.
So Joe Sheehan was editing you guys writing.
Yeah, me and Ken Pomeroy and Kevin Pelton. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. How about that?
And I'll just go on to add. I mean, as long as I'm boasting basketball perspective. If you put, it was around for six seasons, and if you put together the list, which I did one time, it's in a tweet somewhere, of the people who wrote for it. I mean, we rule the world now, and I am far from the most impressive name there.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can say this with pride. I mean, we are everywhere. So it was a good group.
That's great. I want to come back to that because I want to talk Ken Pom, and I want to talk, eventually even talk about this Illinois team and how things look, from statistical analysis side. But for now, so Wonk was 3 years, and then you never, I guess that was even pre-Twitter. So you were just, there was no social media, there was no anything. You were just writing words on the internet. I mean, I remember I found it, I wasn't part of Illini board yet, but I found it on Illini board because it would be linked all the time of, hey, check out this guy's writing and this and that. So, it grew pretty big among the message boards of the day. I don't even know how, if you were aware of that or if you watched the numbers, but at least in Illinois message boards, is like, what did Wonk write this week and all that kind of stuff. So, that you were kind of this, cult kind of guy that everybody was like, nod and agree that you've read Wonk before because that puts you on the inside. So were you aware of the kind of following you had at the time?
I knew the numbers because I followed them. I was interested in, who was landing at my site. And again, it was a very small number, but I have been struck in subsequent years by the knowledge that, people who are interested in basketball, and now that we're talking about this, 16, 15, 14 years later, inevitably people of a certain age do reference things that were in there. So I think, okay, well, even though they were small in number, it seems to have been a good group. And I was incredibly fortunate and lucky. I started writing, and then I became aware of this book by a guy named Dean Oliver called Basketball on Paper, and I read it halfway through the first season, and I thought, wow, this guy, he's got it figured out, and everybody is going to start talking about basketball this way. And in the long term, I was right. Today in 2021, everybody does talk about basketball this way. But I started, writing about it immediately when I read it. I was, I had all of the passion of a new convert. And I found that it was pretty much me and this other guy I located online, Ken Pomeroy. And we kind of had the field to ourselves for a surprisingly long time.
Yeah.
And we took these message boards that you cite, we took abuse from the people who are used to, having their opinions heard. And they were saying, this is nonsense. Don't believe these guys.
Sure.
So I was tremendously fortunate in that aspect because to cover that aspect of Big Ten basketball, now we are just in a wealth of information. But at the time, I had that market cornered, and it worked out really well.
So when Moneyball came out, did you think there was going to be a basketball version and Jonah Hill is playing you in the movie or anything else? Or, were you expecting that kind of awakening on the basketball side?
I was thinking more toward, Matt Damon or George Clooney, of course.
Good. I like it.
Those comparisons are so often made. Yeah.
Yes.
I was not waiting for that, nor am I waiting for that. I think that's possibly a bridge too far, but a paying gig at ESPN is satisfaction enough.
Now, let me ask you, did you ever have, take somebody like Luke Wynn, who wrote about basketball and then went to, I think, the Raptors to work in the front office, some guys in this vein have gone that direction. Did you ever think about that, of like, maybe basketball is my thing, maybe I'll take this, or did you just want to write about it?
I have a true life story to share in that vein. I got a feeler from an NBA team And we are here at the Gasaway House, just like everybody else. We're very much a two-career household. And our two-career household had recently relocated overseas to London. And I literally took this call from a number I didn't recognize while I was walking my dog in Surrey in the UK. And I say hello, and they say, "This is, you know, NB18 name here. Would you be interested in working for us?" And I said, "Well, I'm actually speaking to you from London, and you could literally hear the sigh on the other end of the line."
Right.
Like, never mind.
So right. Interesting.
It was a good 5 seconds while it lasted, but that was my nearest approach to following the Luke Wynn path.
Yeah, but you do have that in your pockets, you know, that you can bring that out. You know, you can tell your grandkids.
Oh yeah,
I
might call that NB18 somewhere sometimes. Say, hey, I'm back in the States now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So basketball prospectus, they were bought out by ESPN, or how did you end up at ESPN? What was the transition there?
ESPN, it's propitious that we make this segue from the previous question. ESPN had just lost a very esteemed staff member to an NBA analytic position. And they thought, well, what we'll do is we'll take the, you know, really big salary that we used to be giving this guy, and we'll spread it out among all these hungry young Turks that nobody knows from Basketball Prospectus. So literally at one swoop, they hired Kevin Pelton, and on the NBA side, Bradford Doolittle, more of a jack of all trades across sports, and me in college basketball, and filled a lot of analytic needs. And that was the spring of 2013. And it was kind of weird because, like, we were shuttering the Basketball Prospectus site, the Baseball Prospectus guys. Nate Silver had long since gone on to greater things, and the remaining baseball guys rightly said, you know, hey, we never bargained to be in the business of basketball.
Right.
So we were shuttering the site, but we couldn't really tell anybody we were. And I think literally the last post for anybody who's been reading along across multiple websites, I think the last post ever was a Tuesday Truths. And at the bottom of it, I just said a, you know, goodbye to Basketball Prospectus. Well, nobody reads the bottom of a 6,000-word Tuesday Truth.
Right.
So
right.
People the next season were like, hey, you know, what the hell?
Where's
Basketball Prospectus?
Right. Well, we did technically say goodbye.
Yeah, it's gone. And if you just go back to the last word I wrote, you'll see. But
yep.
That's how it all played out. Yeah.
Yep. So what was it like for you then, watching the transformation of basketball into what you knew it was? Because, like you said, you read this book and you knew about efficiency, and you knew that, you know, I'm just putting words in your mouth, but you probably knew mid-range jumpers were going away, and you know, a big man like Kofi might not be basketball anymore, and all these kind of things. Like, what was it like for you to watch that transformation? I mean, obviously, I think of Steve Kerr kind of like, hey, we're going to just completely build this team this way kind of thing, and that's what sparked the national interest in it. But what was it like for you to watch that kind of transformation of how basketball was played?
At first, it was kind of gratifying to have a toehold on this stuff really early. And then it became kind of frustrating just for a little bit there that it wasn't catching on faster. But then very quickly, it caught on with a speed that was very gratifying. And, you know, I was the least influential factor in that happening. It was much bigger than anybody who is not named Dean Oliver, or for that matter, Dean Smith, who was also a key forefather in the movement. So, you know, I was just a happy spectator watching this happen. The RPI clung to life longer than I thought it would, but you can pretty much point to 3-point attempt rates both in the NBA and in Division I. There's a 1 to 2 year time lag, but certainly to me, the inflection point was where the NBA was like, aha, threes are, we should be shooting more threes than we have been, was pretty clearly 2012. And past that, everything's been pretty dang cheery. Nobody's yelling at me anymore for yelling about rebound margin as they used to in the old days. So it's been fun. And again, now purely as a reader or as a consumer of content, there's more great stuff out there than I can track. And I remember a time, or I remember when we put out our first basketball prospectus book, and Ken and I were it was jointly done by Ken and I, and we had the discussion that really nobody can edit this, nobody can edit what you're doing except me, and nobody can edit me except you. I mean, that's how small that world was at that time. Maybe that wasn't factually correct, but we didn't know anybody else. And yep. Now it's just the population is vast, the Sloan conference sessions are great. I've had the privilege to teach an analytics class two or three times, and the students in there are just incredibly bright. So it's a brave new world, and it's been fun to be along for that ride.
What was the, I don't even think I know the history of Ken basically saying, okay, I'm going to build this index online, I'm going to have my own site, I'm going to do subscriptions. And was it when basketball's prospectus ended and you went to ESPN and he really went into that full time, or how did that work?
Yeah, Ken has always had his own site, even and he's his sidebar at his site faithfully lists all of the many side hustles that he's had over the years, be they basketball prospectus or Slate or what have you. But he's always had his own site. That's how I found him originally. His site, I think, was called something weird in 2004, like blah, blah, blah or something. And it was visually ugly.
GeoCities kind of a style.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
The,
and yes. At first, everybody was, everybody in the small, very, very small community was raving about this Ken Pomeroy guy online. So I clicked on it. I was like, well, what's the big deal, here? It took about, 2 days before I was like, oh, okay. I get it. And then we were, emailing back and forth, and we've been fast friends ever since. But he's always had his own site. You'd have to talk to him for the date when he flipped the switch on the subscription model. I want to say that was about 8 to 10 years ago. And it's speaking of gratifying, I was watching which Big Ten game the other night. I mean, you can't swing a cat on the Big Ten Network now in 2021 without seeing a graphic, how many teams in the Ken Pom, yep. top 55 or, yep. Ken Pom player of the year ratings, yep. Out to the third decimal. And I got to admit, when I see that, I puff out my chest. And I remember when we were, scrappy young bloggers, I am proud of my friend Ken and where he's gone to and where he started. It's been an amazing rise, and he deserves every bit of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I was on the Underwood press conference yesterday, which are all Zoom right now, obviously, and it's it's in the vernacular now. He was asked, "Your offense is up to six, Ken Pom number six in efficiency, and you were number one at Oklahoma State. Do you see any comparisons between this offense and that offense?" People, it's just part of the way people discuss basketball, and Ken Pom is its own word. It should be in the call Merriam-Webster and let's get the word Ken Pom in there because it means something.
He's the hardest working man in the business, and the thing that I love as a user is that these many years that I've been using his website, he's always improving it. I mean, always, and he's always kind of, and he's he's a low key guy who doesn't, you know, go out on Twitter and say, hey, I did this wacky new thing on my site. So like, you're just using it and you come across something new that you didn't know about. And you're like, whoa, this is really useful. So it's the industry standard, and it's how I do my job. I love it.
It's funny, when I started my first blog in 2009, and I joined Alina Board in 2013. And in the 2009 days, I was somewhat resistant to. In fact, I coined the term, which I still use to this day now, ironically, nerd stats.
Uh-oh.
And so I would just say, you know, like, well, you know, in the nerd stats, they kind of like blah, 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 you know, and, you know, and then, you know, you just, it, you know, everybody has their awakening, right? Like, you just slowly start to get what it meant and what it is. And, you know, this is not something to be mocked anymore. And, you know, it's something to really pay attention to. And now here I am 12 years later when I write, you know, just speaking of KenPom, like it's this normal thing. So, you know, I am one of those converted souls that was at one time, you know, like stupid nerds trying to ruin basketball. And 12 years later, I am like a disciple. So it's pretty amazing, the transformation.
Yeah, it's I get, you know, resistance to things novel. Sometimes novel things don't work out. Sometimes they're not better. But, you know, I can only share, you know, my experience when I was first exposed to this stuff via Dean Oliver. It was like, you know, finally, somebody has figured this out. I was making halting attempts on my own, mm-hmm. to, you know, figure out how to translate basketball seamlessly into, you know, things that we can categorize and count the way it is so easy to do with baseball. But then I learned, you know, why do I have to even try when this guy Dean Oliver did it already? And you know, Ken had that same epiphany, and we both have run with it, and it's given us good careers. So thank you, Dean Oliver.
Okay, so I want to get to the current Big Ten.
Let's do it.
And then get to Illinois, obviously, and talk about this team and their potential. But my first question is, obviously, this is a ridiculously strong Big Ten, and I'm curious if devotion to, I feel like the Big Ten was a little closer to adopting these things than maybe some other conferences. And I'm curious if you see that related in any way to this strength of the Big Ten as it stands today. Because it doesn't seem to be just recruiting or just really great coaches. There's something else that's making this conference, you know, above everyone else right now. What are your thoughts on that?
It was my experience that some prominent Big Ten programs were early adopters of analytics, and not certainly the Big Ten exclusively. There were other early programs to the party, certainly outside the Big Ten, but the league did have a strong representation at that table. It has, speaking of transformations, it has done my heart good to see within the span of a few years at one non-Illinois Big Ten program that I won't name. I used to be furtively contacted by one assistant coach at this program with questions saying, you know, my head coach doesn't really really believe in this stuff, but
right,
you know, what are you seeing? What are you seeing here?
Right.
And indeed, I was on a call with said head coach, and he did say, you know, that stuff I don't care about. I just want to know if my guys are playing hard. And now, within the tenure of the same head coach, come to learn that this same team is using a metric that I myself put together for shot volume. So that's been heartening. The Big Ten is interested in and engaged with this stuff. But in terms of why is it so statistically strong this year, it's a combination of a lot of good things coming together, Northwestern probably being a little better and Michigan being way better than expected. Everybody pretty much improving at the same time. Rutgers improving historically over the last 5 years from where they used to be. Not literally everyone improving, but with one or two exceptions. And lastly, you know, the worst team in the league is Nebraska. And if you look at them closely, which nobody ever would bother to because they're a last place team, they're way better than, you know, the worst team the Big Ten usually historically is. So this is a good league, and they're fun to watch this year.
Yeah, Fred Hoiberg has to be like, what did I get myself into?
Yeah.
Trying to build this, and you know, I'm, you know, 8-9 top 25 teams I'm trying to beat.
Yeah,
and
it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yep. So when you look at this Big Ten, like I said, we're gonna save Illinois for last, but what do you see? You know, in maybe the top teams, you know, everybody has the same opinion on Iowa is, you know, one team, one guy on one team in the tournament's going to get hot and they have no card to play to stop him. And that might be their downfall. And that's their Achilles, and defense is their thing. You know, what do you see? Do you see that from Iowa? What do you see from Michigan in this surge? What do you see from, you know, some of the other top teams as this race really gets heated up?
Right. You know, conceptually, I'm a impassioned advocate of the Iowa model that historically everybody is always so skeptical of, where you're just outstanding on one side of the ball and kind of meh on another side. To me, the key is how much are you outscoring your opponents by? And Iowa is outscoring their opponents by a healthy margin. They are in that sense similar to the Lonzo Ball edition of UCLA in 2017. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, possibly the best team in the country on offense and pretty nothing on defense. And then just to flip the script, the Louisville team for 2012, not the national championship team, but the year before, absolutely putrid on offense, but incredible on defense. They got to the Final Four. So, you know, the key is how much are you outscoring your opponents by? So I'm not ready to shovel dirt on Iowa just yet. And also there's the added factor that it's just really fun to watch a team with the best offense in the country that doesn't really guard anybody that well.
That's
a setup for an, you know, what's not to like there? That's an entertaining game.
Yes.
So, you know, they are not going to march unchallenged to a Big Ten championship by any means. But that's a strong team. If I was giving the National Player of the Year award today, I would give it to Luka Garza. His stats are a little more incredible than people realize, because everybody was saying before the season he's the National Player of the Year. But if you really look at what he's done, it's been pretty amazing. So I'm not sleeping on the Hawkeyes, even though their defense is suspect.
If you like the NBA All-Star game, you're going to love Iowa basketball, is what you're saying. Yes.
And I do like the NBA All-Star games. Yes. And maybe that's why I'm saying this. But
there you go.
I think it's a great watch. Yeah.
Okay, so if you had to handicap, if you had to guess the top three teams at the end of the year in the Big Ten, who would you guess Man. Ends up in the top three?
That is a really tough number. Four is going to be a lot easier.
Okay, I'll give you four. But, I'll give you four then.
Yeah, well, four. I can do that falling out of bed.
It's
Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Shaving
one team off of that, now you're getting tricky. Yeah.
Is it Hunter Dickinson that big of a difference maker for Michigan? I guess I've bought in too much they haven't played anybody, but what puts them in that tier?
That helps. His stats have been insane.
Yeah.
He was not included in the midseason Wooden Award, you know, 25 players list, mm-hmm. which, you know, is to be expected, because he was a freshman that not many people were talking about before the season, but he has just blown up so huge. But it's not just Hunter Dickinson. They play fantastic defense, and their number for defense at KenPom, if they keep doing this, is going to catch up with what we're seeing for the number on offense. Ken's got some priors still in early January in a pandemic year, but in Big Ten play, their defense has actually been better than their offense. So they are legit. They don't miss when they shoot, and they force a ton of misses inside the arc. They will not run the table because they're in a historically tough conference, but they are definitely for real.
Interesting. I don't know why in my head, maybe it's just preseason stuff. I have this handicap in my head that so much comes down to the Illinois-Iowa game, and there's only one game at Illinois and everything else. I have this Wisconsin, some of the parts is great, and five seniors and experience, and they know the system and everything else, but you got to have somebody who's the star. You got to have somebody take over on this night and this and that. So in my mind, I start dismissing Wisconsin for that, and Michigan's not there just yet in my head. So I have this Illinois-Iowa is fair. The thing. But that's again, I cling to narratives and old school stuff, and I still use the term nerd stat. So that's probably,
narratives are there for a reason. You know, they are borne out by experience. So
that's right.
That could happen. Yeah.
Okay. So let's get to Illinois, and I want to get to this by going through the last 4 years, because I'm curious your thoughts on the Underwood transformation. And some people give it to Stephen Gentry coming in and saying, hey, coach, you got to make some changes on D. This isn't going to work in the Big Ten. Some give it to this analytics kid. I don't know if you even know this story. There's this kid from K-State who gave a presentation. And Steve was a student at K-State and said, here's the numbers, and this should scare you. And I think Tyler Underwood, his son, was part of that, getting him in there. And so that became the thing. So what are your thoughts on his transformation of, I'm going to do a ball screen offense now, and I'm going to dump the pressure defense. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm delighted. The proof is in the pudding. The defense is fine. It's not as good as the offense, but it's good enough to get the job done. Illinois is one of the best teams in the country right now. As we're taping this, we think that Gonzaga is a cut above everybody, and Baylor is a cut above everybody except Gonzaga. And maybe that will be borne out. But then in that next tier of teams, there's Illinois and a big group of others. And I couldn't be more delighted, speaking as an Illinois graduate and fan. The defense needed to change. It has. It used to foul prodigiously. There was a moment this year where it was doing that again, and I was wincing and saying, oh, no, are we going back? But we're not. I did take some umbrage at this, analytic awakening of Brad Underwood that didn't include a certain Illinois graduate who has tried to grab his elbow every time.
I like it. I love it.
Yes. Hey, what about, what I said? But, whatever gets the job.
That's right.
Whatever gets the job done, I am all in favor of it. It's just an obvious ascendance, and I'm old enough to remember a point in Brad Underwood's tenure when his featured scorer and arguably most effective weapon was Georgie, and now he can't start. So I mean, this is I don't say that with malice against Georgie. He's
above
him, but I just state it as a fact of the program, and that's a good that's a good evolution to be able to claim to make. So it's been very fun to watch.
And the composition of this team has kind of followed that. I mean, not only Georgie, like you mentioned, but Trent Frazier, first team, Big Ten all freshman team to defensive kind of role player. I don't know what we even call Trent. It always bothers me when I look at KenPom and I go down, I scroll down to the you know, and Trent is either in limited roles or nearly invisible. It's like, wait, hold on a second. You know, like I take like offense to, no, man, that's Trent. He could go off any night, you know, kind of thing. But, you know, what are your thoughts on how this roster has transformed over these 4 years and now to, you know, to Io and Kofi show?
Yeah, it's Illinois has benefited from the layering that, I mean, I'm going to make a absurd comparison here and compare my team to Kentucky 2015.
Love
but,
it. Do
hey,
it.
But hang with me.
Yes, I'm with you.
Kentucky 2015, for anybody who doesn't remember, they went undefeated the whole year before they lost in the Final Four to Wisconsin in one of the possibly the best game I've ever seen in person. But this the similarity that I'm seeing, the reason Kentucky was so good is because, you know, of course, they recruit a crop of one and dones annually. But that particular season, they had a group of one and dones from the year before who surprisingly stuck around. So they had, you know, in effect, two coats of paint talent wise. That's what Illinois got. You know, if we could have this conversation 9 months ago and you could tell me, you know, Io DeSumo and Kofi Coburn are both back, I would say, what? Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, that's amazing. You know, yep. So yep. We get all the benefit of, you know, the highly rated freshmen who came in probably thinking that, you know, there would be fewer veterans than there are. And the results are plain to see. So. They are playing great basketball in a tough league. There will be losses to follow, but I trust that I was about to say this is going to be the best seed that Illinois has had in years, but hey, they're going to be in a tournament for the first
right,
time. In
right.
Years. So
right.
I'll take whatever seed they get because they will be dancing.
Tell me about Io's game in modern basketball because he's really not the. He's a distributor, but he's not a Curbelo like distributor. He's, you know, his strength is the little pull up Frank Williams 9-footer, where he's suddenly in the air above the guy and you don't know how he got there.
Yeah, he loves that.
Yeah, he's probably the best in transition in college basketball. Like that's his true strength. But you know, this isn't the kind of lead guard, scoring guard kind of guy that you're maybe used to in college basketball. So what are your thoughts on his game and the modern college game?
He has just blossomed this year, and it does make me wonder, you know, what if he had gone pro? What would that look like? I think he might have been better than expected because, you know, his legend loomed large last year. I'm not sure people are grasping how much better he really is. I mean, for one thing, I mean, his three-point percentage has improved leaps and bounds. So to state the obvious, it helps when your shots are going in. He is carrying a much larger workload in the Illinois offense than he has before. And as long as I'm flinging out reckless comparisons to great teams of the past, I would never saddle this current Illinois team with comparisons to 2005, but I will only say that the surprise return of Io alongside a distributor like Curbelo, you know, gives us multiple point guards or point guard skill equivalent players on the floor at the same time in kind of the same tradition as, you know, Dee, Darren, and Luther. So it's very pleasing to the eye, and I'm willing to put up with a few losses in a rugged Big Ten to stagger through to a really nice seed in a tournament that will be played entirely within easy driving distance of campus. That seems like a good deal.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it obviously everybody makes you think of 2005 where the route was, you know, Indianapolis, Chicago, St. Louis. It's, you know, it's the same kind of vibe around here. You know, almost intimidates me a little too much to be like, you know, this team would do really well to, you know, be an Elite Eight team, and we haven't been in the tournament in 7 years, and that would be this glorious season. But everybody's so tied into.
Yeah, we just have to be sure that we invite Bill Murray to the Elite Eight game.
That's,
and we know we'll win. Right. Yeah,
that's right. Where is his son now? He's not at Xavier anymore.
Louisville.
Louisville. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So
yeah, good guy. Yes. Yeah, Louisville.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So last question on Illinois is well, I actually have two questions. Just real quick on what you just said. Io is third in KenPom's little player of the year rating thing. What is it that rates him so highly? You know, this is your license to get really technical and you know, talk about certain stats I'm probably not going to understand as well as you. But, you know, what puts him, you know, third nationally in the way Ken puts those ratings together?
Yeah, I hate to disappoint. I don't think I will get very technical at all. His shots are going in, and he is the man on this offense, carrying a larger load than he ever has before. So his efficiency has gone way up, but he's doing it while using many more possessions. So the KenPom algorithm quite rightly loves that and rates him alongside your Luka Garzas and your Trace Jackson Davises. I'm away from the keyboard actually, but I believe that's the current top three.
Yes, you are correct. I have it up right now. Garza one.
Jeopardy.
Yes, Jackson Davis is like slightly ahead of Io by like a
These are all guys who are just, you know, the hearts and souls of their offense, and at the same time they're managing to be efficient. You know, Io's drawing a lot of fouls. He's shooting better from the line than he ever has. He was actually kind of suspect there as a freshman. So it's been a great combination. And I think that, again, I think that credit is due to Io, who has blossomed. I think he is also benefiting from a point guard quality player alongside of him. Curbelo getting so many minutes on the floor alongside of Io, although he doesn't start. And it's a great combination when you've got those skill guys going, and then you've got a player the size and agility of Kofi who can scrape up any missed shots, and it's working really well.
Okay, my final question is going to be kind of a long one, but try to stay with me. I'm going to wander around a little bit. I just wrote about this yesterday because I was, I was on spring break from Illinois. I went to Park City, Utah to go skiing in 1995. This is my final year. I went 5 years. 96 was my final year. I got to correct myself. I always forget that I went 5 years to get my degree. So 95, I'm in Park City, Utah. My buddy and I decide, you know, we're going to go to the tournament games this day. And we drive down to Salt Lake City, and we get to see four games. This is only in the front of my brain because I just looked it up and wrote about it the other night. So I got to see the Joe Smith Maryland team. I got to see the Ray Allen, Donnie Marshall, UConn team, you know, and all this. One of the teams there was Gonzaga, and their very first ever NCAA tournament appearance. And the thought of a team, a tiny school, you know, they were a 14 seed playing the 3 seed Joe Smith Maryland team. They got blown out by 24. Wasn't really even a game. They brought a ton of fans. Just the thought that a team like that, like if you'd have told me in 1995, okay, in 2021, they're going to be number one. They're probably going to go undefeated, and they could be the team that rolls straight through undefeated and wins a title. Like, how does that happen? And does it happen without some of this stuff that we've been talking about? Does that happen without, you know, how is it that Baylor and Gonzaga, tell that to somebody 20 years ago, like, okay, we're going to be 2021. Baylor and Gonzaga are the two premier teams in college basketball. You know, when it was just like, no, it's just recruiting, and Kentucky and Kansas and North Carolina and Duke will be there, and it doesn't matter, and they're going to get the 5 stars, and that's it. What has allowed this to happen, do you think?
I'll take the Baylor part of the question second, because as to the first part of the question, I've got the most happy coincidence to report in that there's a book coming out on March 16th that will answer all of your historical and current Gonzaga questions.
That's perfect. I was going to end by having you plug it, so go ahead.
See, in my zeal to plug the book, I got there first.
Yes, yes, I love it.
Yeah, I got a book coming out on March 16th called Miracles on the Hardwood. It's a history of Catholic college basketball, and that's remarkable that you were at that particular tournament. You were there for Gonzaga's first ever NCAA tournament appearance, and they were besieged with patronizing remarks at that tournament. There was a lot of "How do you pronounce Gonzaga?" and yep. They didn't like it, and their coach at the time, a guy named Dan Fitzgerald, told a writer that week, "We now have indoor plumbing in our locker room." They were really kind of resentful, rightfully so, about it. And look at them now. They bestride the sport like a colossus. So yep. it's been, you know, arguably the biggest and most important story in the 25 years that you bracket right there. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Nobody could have seen it coming. Other programs try and do everything that Gonzaga has done, and it's a lot easier to describe what they've done than to copy it. But, you know, in a nutshell, they started by getting the best talents in the Pacific Northwest that they could, and then they started getting some key transfers, often from the University of Washington. Famously, they recruited abroad before a lot of other programs did, and that to this day is cited as key. And of course, currently they've got a healthy international representation. But the irony of that at this point, now that we're in 2021, is they can go out and they can get a guy like Jalen Suggs. You know, they're competing on an even footing with you know, you name it, Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, and they get that guy. You know, and he's going to be just this, if he wants to be. He's not even the first homegrown one and done that they will have had. Zach Collins holds that distinction. So that is the evolution they have charted, and they're doing it better than anybody. I do think that stability has a lot to do with it, and the fact that few has stayed there forever, and it's been a great story. And the stability is the common note that I would link between Gonzaga and Baylor. You know, Baylor, of course, famously, even in worse shape, coming off of the Dave Bliss scandal in era when Drew took over circa 2004, they were forbidden from playing non-conference games. Yeah. So that's how heavily yep. penalized the program was when Drew first got there. Yep. And now look at them. You know, these are blue collar guys that Baylor has, and they play defense and they get offensive rebounds, and it's a great way to play, and it's a pleasure to watch. Those two teams were supposed to play in December. They didn't because of the pandemic, and I hope and trust we'll get a chance to see them go up against each other in the Final Four. That would be great.
I'll leave you with this. I appreciate you coming on, and I want to have you mention the book one last time, but you'll appreciate my idiocy. So I covered the Illinois game at the Jimmy V, in Indianapolis when Illinois played Baylor, and the game before was West Virginia Gonzaga. And so I'm just sitting there watching, and I hadn't really studied up on Gonzaga. And I tweet this. This is something I tweeted. These are words I put out there that I haven't deleted. I say, just watching this, and I haven't seen Gonzaga this year, but they really have the guards to win the national title. And at the time, like, I think Suggs got like ankle turned up and he was out of the game for a bit or something like that.
Yeah, he did.
And so, but as watching Suggs like take over the world, and that night Nembhard and, you know, these other guys are just like in the second half, they just take over and dominate West Virginia. When Gonzaga does win it all this year, I'm going to look back and I'm going to have a tweet out there in the universe of like, yeah, I think they're really lacking guards. I don't think they can. Yeah. I'm really proud of that. So anyway, so when the book comes out, when in March, did you say?
It comes out March 16th, but please don't wait until then. Go online wherever you choose to buy your books and pre-order Miracles on the Hardwood. It'll be out that day, and hope you have as much fun reading it as I did writing it. And for the Illinois fans in the crowd, keep in mind, heavy overlap, the 1963 National Championship Loyola Chicago team vanquished Illinois in the NCAA tournament that year, and 1952, sadly, Illinois again lost late in the NCAA tournament. So some heavy Illinois appearances, even in a book about Catholic college hoops. So yeah, rush out there and buy my book, please.
Great. I'll put a link directly to it in the podcast notes here. So we'll do that as well. Okay, John, thanks. I appreciate it. Thank you. Let's do this again after Illinois wins the national title, beating Gonzaga because they didn't have the guards to get all the way to the title, and Io and Curbelo dominated them. And that can be the postscript to all of this. So
that sounds great.
Yeah. I appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right.